fitness, nutrition, sleep, longevity, performance, fat loss, and all the keys to a life of health, happiness, and success. I'm Jed Zimmer, your host, and welcome to The Health Project. Welcome back, guys, and we've got episode 42 tonight of The Health Project. It's obviously been a little while in between our last episodes, but nonetheless, it's really exciting to be back, and I think it's going to be worth the wait tonight because it is a really good episode that is for everyone. There's no limitations here. I think everyone can take a lot away from this. I've learned a hell of a lot from Patrick over my journey, and a few of these little things we covered tonight I'm implementing on a daily basis. In particular, to improve my sleep is one of the biggest things that what you're about to hear has made a difference for me. So we've got Patrick McCowan jumping on tonight. He is a man known as the Oxygen Advantage. So he's published multiple books. He's been a TED talker. He is a public figure with everything to do with improving breathing patterns and improving sleep quality, because what you're about to learn is the breath, and in particular nasal breathing, is critical towards achieving deep sleep. So mouth taping is something that now I'm doing on a nightly basis now to improve my sleep quality, which you're about to learn why, as well as breath holding and a few other little things on my daily walk. So tune in tonight to understand why both Patrick and I are advocates of this and why I'm implementing it on a daily basis. So sit back, enjoy tonight's episode. It is a bit of a short one. There's no reason to not enjoy it and sit out the duration of this one, guys. So enjoy. The first thing I want to touch on is basically a little bit about your story when it came down to asthma, where your passion for, the breath, and how you basically hacked your asthma experience.
So I was born in 1973, and when I was about 4 years of age, I was diagnosed with bronchitis. So doctors were hesitant to diagnose asthma with a young child, and probably not to scare parents. And from 4 years of age, I would have been taking different medications. And then, it would have been something that plagued me in terms of going to school, wheezing. I played sports as a kid, but it would often catch me out.
Right.
So I was often caught for breath. I was a chronic mouth breather, and it's not just about asthma. And this is where the treatment of asthma is falling short, because if you have asthma, you don't just have inflammation of the lungs, but you also have inflammation of the nose.
Yep.
And this in turn then is affecting your sleep and your stress levels.
Yeah.
So then in my teenage years, I would have been tired a lot, falling asleep in class.
Yeah.
Not able to concentrate, getting frustrated. I left school when I was 14. Mm. And then I left it for a year. And then I went back to school. It's not that I left it unwilling. It's I actually left it to serve my time in retail. So I was working in a shop from the age of 11.
Yeah.
You could do that back in the 1980s. You wouldn't do it today. So it's slightly different. So I went back when I was 15. The shop was sold. New management came in. I was too young to be taken on.
Yeah.
So I went back to school. I drove myself to get the points for leaving cert. I drove myself to get into university. But for me to get grades, I had to study 10 or 12 hours a day. I'm very driven.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if I was to do it differently by having improved sleep and improved breathing, it would have been a lot easier. And that's why I try and get out to the children and parents. The medical profession, I was going to doctors, and this is not a knock, this is just a reality. This is my own personal experience.
Yeah.
Every 3 months for about 20 years. And I was never told to breathe once through my nose. I had an operation on my nose in 1994. I was never told to breathe through it afterwards.
Crazy.
So, it's just that breathing doesn't come on the agenda with medical doctors. And in terms of medical doctors, often don't see a difference between nose and mouth breathing.
What is the science? What is it when it comes to nasal breathing? How is it so beneficial?
There's so many different reasons. The nose is responsible for about 30 functions in the human body. That's according to Dr. Morris Cottle. But in very simple terms, if somebody has asthma, in Australia, you've got one of the highest instances of asthma in the world.
Yeah.
Your nose is there to filter, to moisten, to regulate volume, to warm air, and also to harness a gas called nitric oxide.
Mm.
Nitric oxide is produced in the nose and the nasal, in the paranasal sinuses.
Right.
And as you breathe through your nose, you pick that gas up into your lungs.
Mm.
Nitric oxide sterilizes the incoming air. It's antiviral, antibacterial.
Mm.
It also helps to redistribute the blood throughout the lungs.
Yeah.
It's a bronchodilator. So you think of all of the people with breathing problems, including asthma.
Yeah.
They're not encouraged to breathe through their nose, but yet their nose is the first point of defense of air coming into the body.
Crazy.
And with COVID-19, researchers now, there's clinical trials looking at nitric oxide as a treatment in hospitals. So inhaled nitric oxide is known for its potential. If you just Google clinical trials, nitric oxide, USA, COVID-19, and you'll see trials of nitric oxide.
Mm.
But the nose is also a potent source of NO. Now, the concentrations through the nose mightn't be to the height of the concentrations that would be inhaled in a hospital. But at the same time, it doesn't make sense to breathe through the mouth.
Mm.
And, you know, if you're mouth breathing, your mouth is dry, you've got worse dental health, you're more prone to drying out of the airways.
Mm.
And the theory with exercise-induced bronchoconstriction is that the airways inflame as a result of dehydration and cooling of the airways.
So what are some of the steps you took and you recommend for people who are mouth breathers? You know, is there some simple practices?
To find out, why are they breathing through the mouth? Is it because of a habit?
Yep.
If it's just because of a habit, we have them, if they're children, we have them wear different tapes.
Mm.
For example, we use tape for children.
Yep.
Called myotape. With adults, what we've done traditionally, we've used this tape here, 3M 1-inch micropore.
Right. And is this something that you would do throughout the day or just for sleep?
With kids. With kids, we definitely get them taped up for a half an hour to an hour per day.
Yeah. Mm.
And we also get them wearing this tape at night. We can't have them wear tape across their lips at night. It's too dangerous.
Yep.
I'm talking about children from 4 years of age upwards.
Mm.
So we have them use a tape that helps to bring the lips together to ensure nasal breathing.
Mm.
We want to address the habit, but we also want to alleviate the obstruction. If the nose is stuffy, there are breathing techniques that you can use to help decongest the nose.
Righto. Mm. What are some of those?
And those involve breath holding. You take a normal breath in and out through your nose, hold your nose, and walk around holding your breath. All of the children's exercises are free.
Mm.
So you'll get them up on our website, buteycoclinic.com/buteycochildren.
Mm.
You'll see that everything is free for children, everything.
Yeah.
Because I put them up on YouTube. I wanted to get it out there. Yes, we do list this product, Myotape. But it's very reasonably priced. Mm. And for 3 months, it's $25.
Yep.
And again, it's necessary for kids to do some mouth taping during the day to change the habit.
And does that taping differ for adults, does it?
The tape is also used for adults, especially for adults who might be apprehensive.
Right. Yep.
So we have people coming in with anxiety, panic attack, you know, and also their doctor mightn't be keen on having their lips taped.
Mm.
But something like this that doesn't cover the lips, there's less apprehension about it. Mm. So to answer your question, it's about, number one is removing the habit of mouth breathing from a psychological point of view.
Mm.
Number two, decongesting the nose.
Mm.
Number three, switching to nasal breathing permanently.
Mm.
Number four, practicing breathing exercises to normalize breathing volume.
Yep.
So we want to look at breathing from three perspectives. I want to look at it from a biochemical point of view, which is carbon dioxide.
Yep.
A biomechanical point of view, which is lateral expansion and contraction of the lower ribs.
Mm.
And also a cadence point of view in terms of reducing the respiratory rate in practice to 6 breaths per minute to stimulate the vagus nerve, to stimulate what's called baroreceptors, to increase heart rate variability.
Right.
And to help restore the functioning of the autonomic nervous system.
Mm.
So I typically will work with an adult. And the first week is all about the biochemistry, giving them breathing exercises to reduce the sensitivity towards carbon dioxide.
Mm.
The second week is about the biomechanics, how to achieve lateral expansion and contraction of the lower ribs, mobilizing the diaphragm, breathing during rest, during sleep, and during physical exercise.
Mm.
Like, many people go to breathing therapists the breathing therapist will teach diaphragmatic breathing, but they won't focus on biochemistry.
Yeah.
And they don't focus on cadence of breathing. And also they don't focus on nose breathing. You cannot achieve low breathing without achieving nose breathing. So if you have an individual who's,
I was just going to ask about the diaphragmatics part of it, obviously, because I know, you know, as you said, a lot of therapists, they just say, just focus on breathing through your belly and that. Is there some truth behind it? Is this important?
Yes.
It is.
Yeah, because... totally, from a number of reasons. One is that if you're breathing into the lower regions of the lungs, this is where the greatest concentration of blood is.
Right, yeah.
So it increases oxygen uptake in the blood.
Okay.
But the key is, it's not about taking a big breath into the lungs. It's about taking a light, slow, deep breath. It's about breathing with lateral expansion and contraction of the lower ribs.
Yeah.
But not over-breathing.
Right.
Like, it's a balance. There's no point in just teaching diaphragmatic breathing and in the process you can hear the person breathing, because then you are getting diaphragmatic breathing, but you are sacrificing the biochemistry. So diaphragmatic breathing is also important for functional movement.
Okay.
I lost you there.
You've got me, sorry.
So you won there.
I was going to ask, when it comes to exercise, you know, the more strenuous and intense exercise gets, I know I find myself breathing through the mouth a lot more vicious. Is it important even during bouts of exercise to try and focus on breathing through the nose?
Well, it's easier to breathe through the nose during physical exercise if you have a higher Bolt score. Important for people to assess Bolt score.
Okay, yep.
And it's also important to sustain nasal breathing for a period of time because then the air hunger goes.
Right.
There is an intensity. There's information there on nose breathing during physical exercise with references.
Okay, cool.
There is also anatomical issues with the nose. If people have very small nostrils or, as you know, a small nasal cavity, they can have difficulty sustaining the volume of air. Generally, athletes or generally individuals will switch from nose to mouth breathing during physical exercise when they are breathing about 35 to 40 liters of air per minute. So it's generally quite high ventilation that you have to make the switch. But if somebody has a higher Bolt score, they can sustain nasal breathing easier. And if they've got a bigger and a better function of the nose, they can also sustain nasal breathing easier. Right. So there's what's called the Cottle maneuver. If you place one finger here and one finger here, just gently press your nostrils apart. Does it make a difference to breathe?
Yeah.
So you get nasal dilator. So do your physical exercise with nasal dilator. Then you will be able to increase the intensity, maintaining nose breathing.
Right, there you go. That's incredible. And
it's 6 to 8 weeks. You'd want to be continuing with 6 to 8 weeks of nose breathing. I'm not quite sure you are a nose breather, Jed. When you were concentrating on fixing the Zoom, your mouth was open.
Yeah, I am.
Just bear in mind, but you should tape your mouth at night.
Yep, I've just recently started doing it. I'm going to give those products that you just mentioned there a go. I've just recently been trying the Somnifix.
Somnifix is a popular tape for taping of the lips.
Yeah, I'm going to give yours a go for sure. And the breath holding.
It probably suits you better because you have a tash.
And what about the breath holding? What's the importance of these exercises? How is this beneficial?
So breath holding is really to disturb the blood acid base balance. So what we're doing is we're putting the body into an anaerobic state to improve buffering capacity. So athletes will train hard to stimulate anaerobic glycolysis. But this will, you know, it will lower their blood oxygen saturation down to about 91%. But it's only mild hypoxemia.
Crazy.
We want to lower the blood oxygen saturation down to about 85% or down into the 80s. We want to have severe hypoxia. So we put the athlete into a severe hypoxia.
Yep.
And we're doing that to force the body to make adaptations. Improve buffering capacity, improved repeated sprint ability in team sports, better recovery. Nasal breathing as well, tied in with it. It reduces the ventilation. It's more economical.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot. You know, if you look at, there's another couple of papers there. The best thing for you to do is probably just go to the science. And you'll see then different breathing and posture, functional movement, etc. So you'll see different reasons why we do the program.
Mm. In terms of a recovery standpoint, how important post-exercise is it to really focus on getting that breath back to normal as soon as possible?
Well, it's less oxidative stress.
Mm. Yeah.
But so also, if you sustain nasal breathing during physical exercise, you'll find that the recovery is reduced.
Mm. All right, awesome.
If you have nasal breathing and if you can tolerate a higher CO2 in the blood, mm. you automatically will have increased oxygen delivery to the tissues.
Yep. In terms of improving sleep, is there, you know, certain breathing techniques that you advise, or it's as simple as, you know, just focusing on what we've touched, nasal breathing, you know, mouth taping at night, any other sort of measures that you like?
Yeah, it's the same, but it's not so simple. You know, you try teaching people. Mm. It's looking at biochemistry, first of all, improving their Bolt score to 25 yep. seconds.
Mm. Mm.
If you're less than 25 seconds, there's a likelihood of dysfunctional breathing.
Yeah.
The whole key is get individuals above 25 seconds of a Bolt score.
Yeah.
If you look at a paper by Kiesel,
yeah,
that individuals, 51 subjects he brought in, he did a study on them. Only 5 of them had functional breathing.
Yeah.
But he determined that breath hold time, the Bolt score, he didn't call it Bolt score, but it's the exact same as what we use.
Mm.
You take a normal breath in and out through your nose, you hold your breath, and you time it in seconds until the first involuntary movement of the breathing muscles. If your Bolt score is above 25 seconds, there's an 89% chance that you don't have dysfunctional breathing patterns.
Mm. Yeah.
So for sleep, we need to bear in mind that the diaphragm is also connected with the upper airway dilator muscles.
Mm.
So if you have an individual breathing fast and hard through an open mouth,
yeah,
their airway is more likely to collapse, they're more likely to snore, they're more likely to have light sleep, and they're more likely to wake up feeling unrefreshed.
Mm.
So recovery, focus, and performance is also dependent on improved sleep quality.
Absolutely.
And researchers will write plenty of books. There's lots of books written about sleep, but none of them are really focusing on nasal breathing.
Nah.
And no. I think unless you get the mouth closed during sleep, you're not going to get the real benefits of improving sleep quality.
There you go. So it can be as simple. I know people often ask me, can it be as simple as even, you know, just putting a little bit of duct tape?
It's certainly a help. There's no question. Yeah, you have your mouth closed during sleep, it improves sleep quality.
Incredible. There you go. That's very, very powerful. I just want to ask, just shifting outside, just to finish a little bit, in terms of increasing oxygen uptake, I'm looking at from more of a biohacking standpoint now. Is there any measures you like, whether it's the use of sauna? You know, cold thermogenesis seems to be another popular topic. Anything like this?
Sauna will increase oxygen delivery to the tissues on the basis that if you look at the oxyhemoglobin dissociation curve.
Yeah.
Oxygen is carried by hemoglobin in the red blood cells.
Yeah.
Oxygen is released from hemoglobin in the presence of higher carbon dioxide and temperature, increased temperature.
Right.
So if you were to do reduced breathing inside in a sauna, your hemoglobin will release oxygen quite readily to the tissues.
Yeah, there you go.
But it's not just that. There's two aspects to it. There's breathing to increase oxygen uptake in the blood.
Yeah.
Number one is breathing through the nose. Mm. That increases the PO2, the pressure of oxygen in the blood, by 10%.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a paper by Bartley on that. I'm not sure if I can send you an attachment. One second. No, it doesn't allow an attachment to be sent via Zoom. But Bartley is an ENT from New Zealand.
Hmm.
I'll just send you, I'm just going to throw them onto an email.
Yeah, beautiful.
So they're sent to you. So you have to look at breathing from a number of perspectives. One is nasal breathing will increase the PO2 in the blood by 10%.
Hmm.
Number two, slow down the respiratory rate down to 6 breaths per minute during rest.
Mm-hmm.
This increases alveolar ventilation. When you breathe, not all of the air gets down into small air sacs in the lungs.
Yeah.
So here you have the nose, you have the throat, you have the trachea, you have the bronchi, the bronchioles.
Mm. Mm.
So much of that air remains in dead space. But if you breathe less breaths per minute, you will increase alveolar ventilation.
All right.
So your breathing becomes significantly more efficient.
Mm.
So the worst thing that anybody could do during physical exercise is to breathe fast and shallow.
Mm.
They should be breathing slow and deep. You're better off increasing the tidal volume, the size of each breath, and reducing the respiratory rate in order to achieve alveolar ventilation and gas exchange. Mm. So on one hand, we can increase oxygen uptake. Mm. We can make breathing more efficient. But on the other hand, we can increase oxygen delivery to the tissues.
Yep.
And that happens with an increased carbon dioxide in the blood.
Right.
Nasal breathing during physical exercise is more difficult because of the air hunger.
Mm.
But the air hunger signifies the carbon dioxide is increased in the blood.
Mm.
So the fraction of expired oxygen is less during physical exercise with nasal breathing. The body utilizes oxygen more. And it was one of your researchers, Morton, who discovered that back in the 1990s.
Mm.
So an Australian researcher, now I can't find the reference there, but you might be able to find it yourself.
Yeah.
So Morton is his name, Morton, or her name. Yeah. And just going to see if I can get the title of the paper. No, it's not coming up for me. So it would take me a little bit to get it. So I'm not sure where it is. Mm. But yeah, Dalham, George Dalham has written good papers on it as well.
That, no doubt. I'm intrigued to ask, have you ever experimented or recommend mouth taping during exercise?
Yeah, we do it. And we also recommend breath holding during exercise.
Okay. Yeah. So this is something
the Wallabies. Your rugby team also practice mouth taping during training.
Okay, there you go. I did not know that.
So,
right, and
effects of
and the breath hold techniques again is that, so close the mouth, breathe in through the nose, hold, and then breathe out through the nose. Is that the
technique? Yeah. Well, you always exhale, hold.
Exhale, hold. Right. Okay.
But I've sent you the science there. So if you look at the science.
Yeah, I will for sure.
So the Wallabies in 2017, they were training with their mouth taped.
There you go. Did not know that. Incredible.
Oh, yeah. And also repeated sprintability has been practiced with Australian rugby union footballers.
Mm.
And it increased their repeated sprintability from 9 to 14 in 4 weeks.
That's phenomenal.
By doing breath holding. So, but I suppose the best thing to do is just kind of go in on that page, the link that I sent you, the science on our webpage, and look through it, go through it yourself there.
Yeah, I will for sure. I'll go through that now. I think we're pretty much covered just about everything I wanted to, Patrick. Again, sure. As I said at the start, I really appreciate you jumping on and being a part of this book project. I'll keep you posted, but you're a huge inspiration. You're a wealth of knowledge. I really appreciate everything. At all, and you're welcome.
Yeah, no worries, and good luck with the book. It's a great process.